Hello and welcome to Home to Her, the podcast that's dedicated to reclaiming the lost and stolen wisdom of the sacred feminine. I'm your host, Liz Kelly, and on each episode, we explore her stories and myths, her spiritual principles, and most importantly, what this wisdom has to offer us right now. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Hey, everybody, and welcome. You know, there's a whole treasure trove of amazing goddess stories that most of us have never heard, and I want to share one with you today because I think it correlates perfectly to our guest, her work, and in a way, even our current situation as we all continue to grapple with the repercussions of this virus that is sweeping the globe. So the story comes from the Japanese Shinto tradition, and this particular version was told by Regina Thomashower in her book, Pussy. Yeah, Pussy. So you might know where we're headed. So in this tradition, there is a Japanese goddess of the sun named Amaterasu, whose name means the heavenly shining one. And as a sun goddess, Amaterasu's job, of course, is to give sunlight to the earth so that plants can grow and people can thrive. And all of that is fine and all is going well until one day Amaterasu is assaulted by her brother, Susanoo, the storm god. And this experience is so devastating for her that she retreats into a cave and refuses to come out. In fact, it's only the goddess Amano Uzume, whose name means the dread female of heaven, which I could not love that more, who is able to draw her out. And how does Amano Uzume do this? Well, first she starts ecstatically dancing outside of the cave, and then she flashes her lady parts at all the gods and goddesses who are watching the dance. And at the sight of Amano Uzume's exposed pussy, the entire crowd erupts in happiness and excitement. So Amaterasu in her cave hears this ruckus. She's curious, it lures her out. And when she sees what Amano Uzume is doing, she starts laughing and dancing too. And thus sunlight returns to the earth and order is restored to the universe. So this story feels like a perfect introduction to my guest today, whose life's work has been all about exploring female sexual pleasure via the stage. And I think there's a message here too about pleasure as an antidote to the darkest of times. So who knows? We'll see if we explore that in our conversation here today too. But right now I want to introduce you to Eleanor O'Brien. Eleanor is the founder and artistic director of Dance Naked Productions, a sex-positive theater company based in Portland, Oregon. She's the creator of 4 original ensemble productions under the title Inviting Desire, along with several other large-scale productions, including 3 original cabarets featuring, quote, regular people doing performance pieces about sexuality. She is also the founder of the biennial Come Inside, a sex and culture theater festival, and she has written and performed multiple solo shows, including her most recent, How to Really, Really, Really Love a Woman, which I can't wait to talk about, and which Broadway World called funny, empowering, and just slightly terrifying all at once. Eleanor should be performing this show at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, the world's largest arts festival, later this year, fingers crossed, with, you know, things work out with this virus. Eleanor is also the host of the monthly event Stand Up Smut, an erotic open mic, and the live streaming show Under the Covers with Eleanor. Hey, a live streaming show, something you can do from home. How wonderful. In addition to all of this, Eleanor teaches workshops in finding the connection between our sexuality and our creativity, and she calls herself a proud pleasure activist. Eleanor, welcome to the show.
Oh my gosh, thanks for having me. It's so fun to hear yourself reflected back to you, like, oh, that sounds cool. I am that. I did do it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty great, aren't I?
You know what I've been loving about what I feel like is the goddess movement is women reclaiming their own awesomeness of, like, and when I see women doing it, I just want to applaud and strengthen and celebrate and cheer. Like, I'm so grateful to Lizzo for being like, I am so sexy and badass. And
She's incredible. Yeah.
It gives me so much hope. So as much as I was reared and trained to be modest and not toot my own horn and quote, show off. That was a big one in my family. Don't show off. Mm-hmm. It is lovely to hear my accomplishments and feel proud of myself for what I have created.
Well, I'm happy that we get to celebrate you on the show today. And one thing that I wanted to ask you too, right off the bat, is in thinking about your bio and looking at it, it seems very clear to me that your life's work has been about sex, and specifically helping people talk about and think about sex in a different, more positive way. So I want to know if that feels like a fair assessment to you, and you know how you might describe that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like, you know, my, I'm going to try to not do, you know, a lot, cause it's a podcast. but I think my work has been around getting people to talk about sexuality and giving them something to talk about. So creating these productions that you could walk away from and say, well, I don't know if I agree with that, or that's not my experience, or I loved this part. And then they'd be off and running into a conversation because I opened it up. I think of myself as a professional vulnerable. I share pretty vulnerable stories from my life as a way of offering permission to others and to giving a starting point to talk about. So yeah, my first show was about it, and it was all kind of a fluke. I say that, and now I see the pathway towards my career and the art that I've made, starting actually at a very young age, and I'll be happy to get into that. The first show that was specifically about sexuality was about this experience that I had training to be a dominatrix. And in New York City, because mm-hmm. I was there to be an actor and I wasn't getting any work. And I thought, oh, you know, I'll try this. It's sort of like a role.
And I love that you just, I have to say, I just love that you just kind of worked that in, you know, so it's when I was training to be a dominatrix and yeah.
Well, that's so great. And the funny thing is literally it lasted a day. And the reason it lasted a day was because I was very cognizant of the fact that I did not want to punish or humiliate anyone, or cause them pain. What I wanted was to hold and rock and uplift. And I think, you know, echoes of the mother there for sure. And the story that I end up telling in my first show is sort of about that, that experience. And it also incorporates, funnily enough, ecstatic dance, because that was something that I had incorporated in my life as a practice of non-judgment and openness and love for other humans. But it happened to be about being a dominatrix. And so all of these people came to see it thinking it was going to be this raunchy show about, you know, whips and chains and, you know, and it ends up being this. Actually, I created a character that I called the Goddess Dom, funnily enough. And this was in 2004 that I wrote the show. And it was my idea of what that creature would be like, that she had this impenetrable self-confidence in her body and in her way, her sexuality in the world, because to me there was nothing almost more distant to who I was as a person than somebody with massive self-confidence in her own power. So I wanted to play that on stage. I gave myself that gift of what it would be like to play that on stage. And what it ends up being for the audience is after I tell this whole story, we have this seminar on radical self-lust, in which I have people touch themselves and imagine going down on themselves, and it's a comedy, you know. I mean, so there's a way in through laughter. It's, you know,
yes.
But that was my first show, and I had to fill out a form for a fringe festival to ask my company name. And that's when I decided Dance Naked came to me, because I thought that's the most vulnerable, joyful thing I can think of.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I want to put on stage, is joyful vulnerability. And the thing about sexuality that was very present to me early on was that there was a fair amount of literature and media around sexuality but it was in ways in which sexuality was punished or there was trauma involved, which is very real. But I wanted to be this voice of sexuality as a practice of joy, a practice of connection, the possibilities within it. So that's where my art has come from the very beginning. And actually I feel like I've incorporated sort of more of the reality of trauma, and that, you know, not people don't have good models in sex education, and tried to acknowledge that, as well as how do we move that into a place of joy and appreciation and all of the good things.
Yeah. So, as opposed to staying like stuck there. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also love what you said about sharing your own vulnerability. I think that's so beautiful, because it's different than, you know, stirring the pot just to stir the pot, or trying to put something out for shock value. When you're willing to put yourself out there in a vulnerable way, it invites people into the experience differently. That also feels very divine feminine to me.
It's so important. I got to tell you, Liz, I just took an online workshop, my first online workshop in storytelling. And what I thought was, it ended up being, you know, a Zoom room like this, and it was just me and one other guy and the instructor. And the thing that was so strange was it was basically just telling stories. And I said, well, you know, I tell stories about sex. I want to check in with you, this older man, probably in his 70s or 80s. I said, you know, is it okay if I tell a story about sex? Are you all right? And he was, oh yeah. And so I told this story that was definitely vulnerable. And then he told one too, which was so beautiful and moving. And then she ended the workshop, you know, like it was like, okay, that's it. And I was thought, oh, she's not going to tell a story. And it was so strange to me. And I just was like, oh, I didn't realize, like, that is a huge piece for me of how I teach and how I connect, is I have to go there too.
Yeah. We'll talk about that, because I want to talk about your show, your most recent show. I think that's so obvious there, and the way you do that is you build beautiful connection. But I want to go back to, I'm always curious about how people get on their paths, you know, and especially with something like this. I'm really curious if you grew up, you're like one of those really lucky kids that grew up in a super sex positive household, or how you just sort of stumbled upon this as your work.
Okay. I have a couple of stories about that, and I'm just trying to edit my mind. I did grow up in a super sex positive household, and I'm very
lucky.
Blessed.
You. Yeah.
Lucky me. So my mother is, she's a therapist and an actress. And my father is a scientist. So I didn't grow up in a religious household at all. And I grew up in the theater. So, when I was 8 years old, I got to do a show that was called The Jewel Box, and it was such a seminal experience in my childhood. The Jewel Box was a story about a gay man who gets to relive his life in a shame-free environment. And what would that be like? And it was directed and costumed by this man named Rick Young, who was one of the first people I knew to die of AIDS in the 80s. But he was an incredible costumer, like just the most imaginative, beautiful, just stunning work. And so the story is this man goes through all of these sort of metaphorical worlds. And I got to play him as a child when he gets sent back to have this life do over. So I literally only had one scene. And the rest of this play was about this, like what life would be like without shame. And one of the scenes was the land of the black opal. And it was men in rhinestone cock rings and leather chaps. And it was sort of choreographed and erotic. And there was dry ice. And there was a Harley Davidson on stage. And I remember watching that scene from the wings and just thinking, you know, when I grow up, I want to be a gay man. Like, what fun they're getting to have, and this energy that I, you know, what is this? And I would get to hang out backstage, and it was like there was an ease. taboos around sex and nudity and, you know, and I never forgot that experience. I think that was really, you know, it was deeply implemented who I was and my attitude around sex and my curiosity around it. And then when I was 14, I auditioned for a show that was sponsored by Planned Parenthood, and it was called Teens and Company. And we had a whole summer where we went to Planned Parenthood and got to learn about sexuality and psychology around sexuality, you know, and consent. I mean, this is, you know, 30 years ago, right? And then we wrote a show about it. And then we toured that show to high schools. And I think we went to like 40 high schools that year. And so I really got to cement this idea that one of the ways that you educate is through theater and storytelling. And then when I was in my 20s and I'd moved to Seattle to be an actress, I got to see Eve Ensler do the Vagina Monologues as a solo show in a little black box theater. And it was the most extraordinary thing I'd ever seen. And I remember at the end of it, standing up, cheering. I was the first to stand, and I was just like jaw dropped about what was possible, because I'd done theater my whole life. And yet this person standing up and telling all these stories about vaginas, it's never occurred to me that that was okay. And that opened up another layer of possibility in my life and direction and guidance. I think of Eve Ensler as one of my totem figures. And then when I was in, oh, this is a fascinating twist I never realized. When I was in New York City after grad school, I went to grad school for theater at the Old Globe, and I thought I would do regional theater and Shakespeare and Broadway and everything. And I moved to New York, and I auditioned for 2 years, and I didn't get any work. I had fabulous restaurant jobs, but no acting jobs. And then my one acting job in New York City, I got cast in a kid show called Baba Yaga, Little Girl Stew, which is a Russian folktale.
Yes, and, which is about a goddess, Baba Yaga. Yeah.
Yes, Baba Yaga, right? And it toured to the Canadian Fringe Festival, which I had never heard about. And it was this, you know, it's this thing that happens in Canada, where each city has its own like 2 week festival. And there are a lot of it is solo shows and personal storytelling. And it was like, you know, this next light bulb went on for me of like, oh, I want to do that. And I went back to New York City and I took a class in how to write a solo show. And I was writing a show about a woman who talks to God through the form of a cockroach. Don't ask. It was terrible. And one day I hadn't done my homework, and the instructor said, well, just tell a story from your life. So I ended up telling this story about the one time I tried to be a dominatrix and failed miserably. And everybody was like, oh, that's a fun story. Let's hear more about that. And that ended up being how I developed my first solo show. And then it was off from there.
Wow.
Yeah. So yes, I did grow up, and my parents go to all my shows. They support the hell out of me. You know, it's funny, this last show, How to Really, Really, Really Love a Woman. I was doing it in Portland, where I'm from, and every night was totally sold out, and every night was packed. It was a beautiful experience. I did it for 11 performances here, and my parents came to see one of them, and there were only 2 seats left, and they got there right at 8, and I was like, oh, perfect, there's 2 seats left, and I ushered them in, because when I do shows, I greet everybody at the door, and I hug people, and I really, I mean, it is a practice of making it feel very comfortable and inclusive from the very beginning, right? And so I say to the audience, I'm like, oh, my parents are here, you know, then I sit them in the, you know, and they were in this middle of the second row, which meant that as I look out at the audience in the, you know, when I create a fourth wall of like when I'm talking to somebody else in the show or whatever, I'm looking right at my father. And I was like, oh no, I did this to myself. So I had to like shift the center over, you know, a little bit.
Yes.
So that it didn't look like I'm, oh, it was so funny. I was like, how ironic. But the thing that's been beautiful and I'm so blessed by is having their support, and they really believe in me, and they believe in what I'm doing. And I could say more about them and how I grew up and stories, you know, about learning about sex through having conversations and arguments. And, but yeah, I, and I'd be, I'd, I'd be happy to go more into that, but yes, the answer is yes, I did.
No, I love it. Yeah. I love what the stories that you shared. And since you referred to your most recent show, How to Really, Really, Really Love a Woman, I would love to talk about that just so we can give the listeners kind of a sense of what it might be like to be looking at your father while you're doing the show. So tell us a little bit about it and also what the inspiration was for it.
Okay. Thanks for that question. I'd love to. I love this show so much. I love doing this show. I love talking about this show. I feel like, you know, right now this is definitely my life's work, right? So this show came out of, I teach a class called Seducing the Muse. And and one of the exercises was about writing into what is the sexual future you want to create. Like, you know, we look at things like, you know, where do you feel stuck and how can you imagine becoming unstuck, right? So for me, I recognize that I had a real block around receiving cunnilingus. Like, it's just very hard for me to relax and just kind of give in. Like, I've always had this tape in my head of, oh, maybe it's not very tasty, maybe it doesn't smell good, what if there's toilet paper bits, you know, what if they're just doing it and they're hating it, and they're doing it out of obligation, and so I would, you know, allow lovers to do that for, you know, a couple of minutes at the most, and then sort of be like, okay, moving on. And so I wrote this piece for myself that was based on an experience I'd had at, I was in a friend's cabin in the woods, and the bed was built up into the cabin. So it was up off the floor, and it felt like being on an altar. And I ended up fantasizing as my lover went down on me that I was a temple priestess and that he was coming to worship, and that this going down on me was less about me and more about his offering to the goddess. And what I found was that fantasy actually really helped me get into it and give over to it. And I started making noise because we were in the middle of the woods and nobody could hear it. And it was a really fucking awesome experience and the orgasm. Like, I very rarely had at that point ever orgasmed from cunnilingus, and, like, you know, so all the stars aligned really to make this feel like a really special experience. And so I ended up writing a piece about it, and because I'm an actor and because I make theater, I theatricalized it so that the goddess actually speaks through my pussy as I'm, you know, having this experience, and she's advising me, like, you know, relax and let go and let him worship at the altar. And then I did a show. So I did that for the class. That was my piece, because we do a recital at the end of the class, and everybody loved it, and that was so fun. And then I did a group show. I do these ensemble shows where I help people develop their own pieces, and it was called Sex We Can. And it was the same theme of the future you want to live into. And I ended up doing that same piece. And for you who've seen the show, it's sort of the centerpiece of the show. It's what I call the cabin scene. Mm-hmm. And I had such a good time doing that piece. And it was like about 15 minutes long at that point that I was like, how can I keep doing this? So I ended up writing a show around that piece and kind of including that piece and developing it into an hour long show in which I tell the story in a nutshell of my own, like, how did I get to be, why was I, who was raised by a liberal, you know, liberal parents, feminist mother, you know, I had access to the joy of sex, you know, I did this show about sexuality at for Planned Parenthood, for Christ's sake, why did I have this discomfort with my own pussy, my own genitals, and how did I, you know, how did I overcome it, and where did I take it from there? Because that's really what a lot of one-person show stories are, is, you know, like your own overcoming, right?
Yeah.
And I had read the book Vagina at that point, and I felt by Naomi Wolf. And what that book helped me realize is how much our culture has denigrated pussy. And, like, all of the examples she gives, I realize, like, all these examples in my own life of people, you know, making fun of pussy, or, like, you know, calling it a twat or a slit or a gash or a hole, you know, that whole thing of cunt, and how negative the vibration is around that. And in my, like I talk about in the show, when I was growing up, you know, in my high school, getting laid was known as score tuna, you know. Right. Like just, and even my own lovers making jokes about fish. And so anyway, her description in that book about how women can actually enjoy sexual pleasure, what she calls the goddess array. Have you read that book?
I have. I love it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And that was like, so a big, that was a big inspiration for the show. And I talk in my show about the five fundamentals of goddess worship. And those all come directly from the goddess array, you know, the feeling of safety, the being present, you know, the taking your time, all of that. The acts of service and showing your devotion in other ways that are non-sexual, you know, how important that is for a woman. I think in other areas of psychology, you would call that investment behaviors, you know. So that's how the show came to be.
Well, one thing that I think is fascinating too is that, and you kind of just touched on this, but here you are, somebody who's done quite a lot of theater on the topic of sex, and yet here you are in the show talking about these feelings of like maybe my own body is kind of gross, or that, you know, that it's there's something wrong, like having a hard time getting comfortable, that I think so many women can relate to who have not had your type of progressive experience. So that was very profound to me, and it really, it's so rare, I think, for women to even with among our friends to be in that kind of safe space that you create in this show to talk about some of these feelings, and to really acknowledge that it is a cultural thing. It's all around us. So I just thought that was profound to me. It was like seeing, and I'm so glad you mentioned the Vagina Monologues, because I had a similar experience. I saw that show with Eve Ensler in Chicago in the early 2000s, I think. And really, I was in my early 20s. I was like, what is this? You know, I had a totally different upbringing than you. So it was quite shocking, but I thought it was amazing. And then when I saw your show, I'm like, this is like Vagina Monologues, but to the next level to me. So
thank you.
I was very moved by it. Yeah.
What a compliment. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel so privileged, Liz, to do this show, because, you know, I, and the show has grown and changed since I made the video that you watched, which I am happy to provide to your listeners, continues to grow and change and evolve. So, and that's, yeah. So that's what I wanted to do is build on it. And when I get to do this show and women come up to me afterwards, I have not done a show where somebody hasn't come up to me afterwards, and told me her story, and about being shamed or being, you know, like one woman told me, you know, she'd been married for 18 years and her husband had never gone down on her because it was smelly, you know? One woman told me that when she was caught by her mother at 4 years old masturbating, that her mother beat her pussy with a stick. And, you know, and I feel like that it's just, it feels like a real privilege to get to hold these stories with these women and hear their stories and help them transform their stories, that we're not stuck.
Yes. That feels so potent right now too, especially in this kind of, I don't know where we are with the whole Me Too era, but that whole movement was about telling our stories of sexual trauma. And there are so many, and it's so important to get that out. But to your point, you know, we also need the stories of sexual pleasure. Like let's bring all of that out.
Yes.
So that we can transform this act into what it's supposed to be.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that is my great privilege in life, is to get to have that work. And so to speak to that right now, if it's okay, if you mind me taking it in that direction.
Absolutely.
So right now, I'm in quarantine with my parents, and I don't have a lover with me, and no possibility of that for the foreseeable future. Which has been a really humbling thing, like realizing how much I rely on sexual interaction or even just touch interaction with others to connect to my own sexuality. And for the first week or two of this, you know, quarantine, I guess we're in week two now, really. My masturbation has been really perfunctory and like, just sort of like, okay, help me sleep, you know, Hitachi Wand, 3 minutes max, you know, kind of thing. And it's made me a little bit sad because I have been like, well, you know, this thing that I talk about, you know, where is that for me? I don't feel much desire. I don't feel much, you know, connection to my pussy really. And I've also tried to be really gentle with myself and be like, okay, that's what is right now. You know, you're not writing erotica. You're not having hot phone sex with potential lovers. You know, and I've just been doing a lot of sitting and listening to the earth, you know, like, I can't be productive. I can't seem to motivate. And I've been trying to be like, okay, all right, this huge shift is happening right now. You are allowed to just be and just listen and try to sense into your own intuition what is needed right now. So that's where I've been. But I will say that I finally, I live in a tiny house behind my parents' house. So I tend to feel sort of inhibited in my masturbation because my mother's not a knocker. And at any point, she could sort of fling the door open, you know.
You think and, she'd be prepared and, based on your work, you know, to like give you a little space.
You would think. But she's not, never has been. I can't tell you the number of times I feel like my mother has walked in on me having sex. So this last Saturday, I guess, my parents went out on a long bike ride. They just got electric bikes. And so I knew I had this time where they weren't going to be here. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to actually take some time to like really connect to my pussy and listen and feel and go slow and look at this beautiful gift we have of time right now. At least I do, because I don't have children. And, you know, so I got to reconnect with my pussy and get out some of my toys that I haven't used in a while. And I didn't go straight to my sort of go-to porn or erotica, which like is sort of that like lizard brain trigger of like, I know it's going to get me off really quickly. Mm-hmm. And I just allowed myself to touch my pussy. And it was really interesting, Liz. I discovered ways to touch myself that I was unaware of. Hmm. That I was like, oh, I didn't realize I liked that. And I had my finger inside myself at one point and I was like just hyper aware of how the tiniest movement, like the tiniest shift of my finger, produced this really noticeable effect inside of me. Like, I don't tend to masturbate that way. I don't tend to put my fingers inside myself very often, but I enjoy it when my lovers do. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, I wonder if I could recreate that for myself. And it was, it really felt like an opening of sorts to, oh, there is this opportunity here for me in this, all of this horribleness and awfulness, you know, that's going on around us. And I want to say caveat, it's very vulnerable to talk about because again, it feels like right now what's okay to talk about is the calamity and the oh my God, what are we going to do? You know, how can you protect yourself? Like those are the acceptable topics right now and the death rate and the climbing number of bodies and all of that. So it feels like, should I even be talking about my masturbation practices right now? Right. How frivolous. What a nice luxury for you, lady. I got 3 kids I'm trying to homeschool, whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. And I guess this
is where my work and my background as a pleasure activist kicks in, because I do think this is vital. I really do. And I think this is this gift that we have been given by the goddess, by the divine feminine, this gift of our own bodies and what they are capable of offering us. And I don't think it's encouraged. I don't think it's talked about much. I am super grateful to the pleasure activists that have come before me and that have advocated for this. One I'd like to shout out right now is Adrienne Marie Brown, who wrote the book Pleasure Activism.
I love her.
Which has been a Bible for me. I love her. I am so grateful for her words right now. That keeps me strong, that reminds me, no, Eleanor, actually, this is important. And it's okay to speak your truth right now about this being important to you, even in this time of pandemic, that touching in and taking time and giving our own bodies pleasure. And if we're so lucky, other people's bodies too. But this is the medicine. This is the medicine I need right now.
Yeah.
It helps me calm. It helps me relax. It helps me feel safe. And it brings me great pleasure. So,
yeah.
I just wanted to put that out there.
I love it. And it also makes me think of what I've learned from studying the divine feminine, which is, well, she is all things, you know? So pleasure is perhaps even more important in times of difficulty and tragedy than ever, you know? Mm-hmm. I've been thinking a lot about this. I mean, I think that we as a culture have, well, especially maybe our generation or so, we've fooled ourselves. We've kind of engineered mass suffering out of, like, especially in a Western world. I want to acknowledge that this is like a privileged, you know, like basically white America kind of thing, where you can engineer mass suffering out of your experience. And so now that we're in it and we're seeing it, we're like, oh my God, what do we do? And to your point, it's like, well, all we can do is stay in that suffering. And I don't really think that that's how we're meant to live. I think if finding the joy is going to be the way we make it out of this.
Yeah, I think that there is this offering in this time, and there's a great poem going around Facebook right now, The Gift of This Virus. And yeah, the portal that's opening, the shift that's happening, the opportunity to recreate and renew our world, almost like to start over. And I think that we have lived in a world of deep consumption for a long time. And a lot of that, like, that's all we know, is this kind of consumptive life. And that this virus is like putting an end to that, and really giving us this opportunity to look at that, to look at all of our consumption and supply chains and how we're all interconnected, and it, you know, a tragedy in China affects us all here in America, et cetera, et cetera. Like it's unprecedented how we're all dealing with the same thing at the same time. And I think that the opportunity to almost like change the water that we swim in, you know, this, that we've watered of patriarchy and capitalism, back to our bodies, back to our bodies and what they are capable of, starting there, with getting to know your own body's abilities and pleasure being at the core of that.
Yeah. Yeah, the other thing that I thought of when you were describing your experience with your own body and your finger inside of yourself, and I was thinking about how almost, and I don't know if you would agree with this statement, but how overstimulated I think we all are because we have so many resources. Like, there's so much, and if we want to put that in sexual terms, you know, there is porn, there's toys, there's this, there's that, there's like, blah, you can just inundate yourself with stuff. And it's fine if you use that, but do you need that? Is there this beauty and this particular time and this slowing down of having a minimalist approach to, of like, really, I am going to explore my body and know what it's capable of and what my ancestors knew that it was capable of, you know?
Right,
Because they weren't watching porn on TV or whatever, you know? They were just dropping into themselves. That feels like a real gift, too.
I totally agree. Yeah, it's funny. You know, I had a friend who, she WhatsApped me the other day, and she said, you know, she had masturbated, and she added, with a vibrator, which is what I do 99% of the time. I don't judge me. And it was so funny, because I immediately, you know, WhatsApped her back, and I was like, oh my God, I would never judge you. Like, use the tools at your disposal. Yeah. Absolutely. And for me, who uses a Hitachi vibrator 99% of the time, that was revelatory to slow down and use my own. Also, I will add that it was a reminder that orgasm is a nice byproduct, but it isn't necessary to get to the finish. I'm making air quotes on a podcast. you know, that like, actually the point is pleasure. Am I enjoying this? Does this feel good? What if I stayed in this moment and just went, oh, funny. You know, I very rarely, okay, I'm just going to get graphic because that's who I am. I very rarely stroke my own inner labia. Like, I, you know, I tend to be clit focused. Like, that's the big winner, folks. You know, that's where your, you know, nerve endings are, right?
Yeah.
And I had this experience of just like stroking my inner labia. And it was like, oh, what? Why, there's quite a bit of nerve ending there too. How magical. Yeah. And I spent like 5 minutes just sort of, and I thought, this isn't going to bring me to orgasm, but boy, it feels nice.
Yeah.
Goddess, thanks for that.
Like, well, and what a great gift to be able to, you know, because would you make this time? Maybe you would. Who knows? Maybe it wouldn't take a global pandemic for you to make the time to explore your body in this way. But the reality is, here you are. You're at home. You cannot get out. So what a great gift that this slowing down time gives you an opportunity to rediscover your body in a different way. It feels really beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, yeah. That is a side effect silver lining.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do want to go back to your show, your most recent show.
Yeah.
Because there was another thing, there's so much that I loved about it. And I think it'd be amazing if you share the link, if people can see it. It's just fantastic. It's just a wonderful show. But I want to go back to the beyond just the content, which I thought was wonderful. You talked about the divine feminine. That was really where my ears started to perk up. I was like, oh my gosh, she worked this in. This is so great. So I'd love to hear from you, like how that has woven itself, that wisdom of the divine feminine has come to you and woven itself into your work.
Oh, thanks for that question. Yeah, I feel so lucky to have what almost feels like a happy accident. I had the similar experience that Naomi Wolf talks about in her book, Vagina, in that when people would call me goddess, you know, be like, oh, you're such a goddess. You know, I'd be like, no, I'm a human. This is ridiculous, you know? And my experience and knowledge of goddess worship was passing, you know, I have woo-woo friends, and I'm in the ecstatic dance community. So, you know, Kuan Yin and Lakshmi and Kali and, you know, have made an appearance in my life here and there, and I appreciate that. But I was raised in a culture, you know, in which God is a masculine and Jesus is blah, 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 right? And, you know, I certainly in my own languaging will say, oh my God, you know, and although I never use he in a pronoun around God, because that just has always weirded me out. But I actually, that God having a gender was such an odd idea, right?
Yes.
Although
it was a given, you know, for a Southern Baptist like me, that it was a he. But yes, continue.
Right, and for so many people, it was. And but when you really think about it, like, oh, the creator of all life is a man. Interesting. Okay.
How does that make sense? I know. Yeah.
Right? So in my show, when the goddess speaks through my pussy, I will admit that at first it was a theatrical device and something I just thought was funny. You know? Like, you know, it's such a goofball idea. And then I had this experience, and I mentioned this to you, and I'll just kind of nutshell it. After I had done the show for many months, and I knew that I, and I'd come home from doing a festival up in BC, Vancouver, BC, I decided I was going to apply to do the Edinburgh Fringe, which is the biggest fringe in the world, and the competition is fierce. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to hire a director so that this show is as polished as it can be. And before that, I really hadn't been able to afford that, you know. But I decided that was a priority for me. I wanted to have outside eyes on it. I wanted to make, you know, make a really good show. So I hired a woman who was an old friend of my family. You know, I've known since I was a little girl, actually. And she watched me do my show. She watched the video that you saw, and she watched me do the show just for her. And she said, well, you know, she said, oh, I love your show. I think it's great. But, you know, the parts where you have the goddess's voice, I think are kind of cheesy. And like, I don't really understand, you know, like it doesn't feel so connected to me. Like, I really like the parts of the show where it's your story, you know, your personal story. And I was like, God, goddess. it was such a arresting thing for her to say, because I had one of those dark nights of the soul of, well, shit, I don't know what the goddess means to me. I can't verbalize it. I can't, like, I don't know how to rewrite this show so that it makes it feel more relevant and connected. Fuck you. You know, like, and so I spent months in this place of weird paralysis and rewriting the show, but also going out there and seeking inspiration everywhere. So that's when I joined your Facebook group, Home to Her. Mm-hmm. I joined another Facebook group, The Goddess Awakens, and I started reading Sarah Beek's work, Red Hot and Holy, and listening to other podcasts about the goddess, and you know, looking at finding books. And so I was in this, like, at first what felt sort of frantic of like, oh, I got to figure this out. And as I started to read all of this stuff, what really came through for me was kind of a relaxing into it. And this idea that, Eleanor, there's no one way. You're never going to have it all. You're never going to get it right. You're never going to know all the facts and figures about Kuan Yin and blah, 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 you know, like. Yeah. There's thousands of goddesses to know about, and you'll never know about them all. And that's not the point. The point is, what is your lived experience in your body? And what does it mean to listen to your own intuition? What do you need? What's true for you? And start there and calm down, you know?
Yes.
And that was such a gift. And so as I rewrote the show, and I wouldn't say that it has a huge rewrite, but what has been threaded into it now that I feel very conscious of offering the audience is the most important thing about goddess worship is your own experience, your own lived experience with it. What is it for you to connect to the Divine Mother?
100%.
Right. And it's great to look outside of yourself to other people's experience to inspire you. But in the end, there's no right or wrong. There's no dogma. There's no rules. There's a new line in my show where I say there's no special underpants. You know, there's just your lived experience. And then I say, and in terms of goddess worship, AKA eating pussy, there's these five fundamentals. And then I give the guidelines for that, which are, you know, beginner's mind of starting from scratch every time and really listening and being present, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, and you know what I think is funny too, that I think you just referenced is when you were talking about the goddess speaking through the pussy, I mean, I'm sure you found when you started doing your research that that's exactly what she would do, though, you know? So all you have to do is listen to your intuition, and then it was guiding you. You're probably picking up on this, you know, whatever this cosmic soup is, ancestral knowledge that you already had, that, you know, and you see this all over the prehistoric art, you know, and the... Yep. I'm sure you've seen the Sheila na Gigs from Ireland,
of
right?
Course, like, of course.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes. So you found it, you know, you found it by listening to your own experience. It just moved right through you.
My friend who worked with me on the show, she used to say, what you're doing is kind of erotic ritual theater. And I love that.
I love that too.
Like, there, she's with me. Like, trust it. Trust her guidance through this process.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that is so important. And also such an important message right now, beyond the discussion of sex, you know, of just really, the more we can drop into that, trusting our own body, our own experiences, and that we've got that intuition and that internal guidepost, the better off we will be, especially in crazy, crazy times like this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. You know, one of my rituals I'll just throw out there is every morning I wake up and I put a hand on my heart and a hand on my pussy. And I just say, I love you. I love you. And I started doing that years and years ago when I read a book called Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It, because it does.
Yeah.
And that book doesn't recommend putting your hand on your pussy, but that's what evolved out of it for me. It's this holding of myself. And the funny thing is, Liz, now with my audience, I do it all the time. I start almost everything with inviting the audience to put a hand on their heart and a hand on their genitals, you know, and sort of this self-connection. And it's become one of my theatrical rituals as well as personal rituals. And it's very comforting. So I hope up to you and your listening audience.
I love it. That's a beautiful, I think that'd be a beautiful ritual that we could all incorporate, you know? I mean, I can't think of a better way to start your day, especially right now.
Yeah.
So I had this question, you know, I was thinking about what I wanted to ask you for the show. And this feels like, in particular, this moment in time is a really good time to think about the world we want to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's like we've hit this big pause that none of us could have even imagined happening a few weeks ago.
Right.
So if we imagine a world in which the female orgasm is celebrated and pleasure is considered sacred and just as important as, say, the GDP.
Right.
What do you think that would look like, and what would that give us?
Well, I think that there's a recalibrating that has to happen, right? So over the last 5,000 years, you know, we've lived under the system of patriarchy and consumption and hierarchy and control has run rampant. And in terms of sex, it's been about men's orgasm and men's finishing, you know, and that women have really been sort of repositories, you know, and what the divine feminine brings, what women bring, what the female energy brings of compassion, connection, trusting intuition, not needing to be right, allowing like sort of the win-win of everybody getting to contribute, all of that. That has been negated and suppressed, right? And our cultural and structural systems have been hierarchical. And I was listening to a great it was a YouTube video by Martha Beck about.
I love her.
I love her so much, and she talked about the pyramid and the wave. And the pyramid being the sort of hierarchical system, right? And she does this great visual in the video of where she has a pyramid of sugar cubes that she's built. And then she talks about the wave of the ocean being the feminine of where we're all drops. We're all drops in the ocean, and no drop is better than any other drop. And all drops are important and make up the whole wave, you know? And that as we move into this new world, this new age, that we are going to dissolve the pyramid into the wave. And she does this visual where she pours this water that happens to be blue into the dish with the sugar cubes. And as during the course of her video, it all dissolves in. And she talks about it becoming sort of this sweet soup, really, where we all have a role to play, and we're all a thread in the tapestry. And I know I'm mixing metaphors here, but that is the world that I want to live into, where everybody's voice is valued, and we all recognize the interconnectedness of each other and the need to care for one another, and that in particular, women's pleasure leads to their ability to lead, to envision, to stay motivated, to care for, and that it keeps us from burnout. So we get to step up and step in, because what pleasure does for us scientifically is it shifts our chemical drip, our hormonal drip from oxytocin, from what I think it is now, which is cortisol and adrenaline, right? Yeah. That's sort of the constant, is this sort of fear and anxiety, right?
Yeah.
But what we're meant to live in, what I believe is our goddess-given hormonal drip, is meant to be dopamine and oxytocin, which is what pleasure, physical pleasure, sexual pleasure gives you. That when our pussies are aroused and happy, they trigger our pituitary gland to produce dopamine and oxytocin. And so if we have a regular drip of those things, dopamine is responsible for motivation and optimism. Mm-hmm. That is what dopamine does. And oxytocin helps us feel connected to others and calms our nervous systems, right? So through those two things and that shift to a pleasure consciousness, I believe our culture around the world globally, if we shift to pleasure consciousness and respecting women's pleasure and the sacred pussy, we will be able to grow a new culture that is based on connection and inclusion and the importance of the network and holding mm-hmm. one another and seeing one another and not coming from a place of being right, and that there is sort of these fixed laws or fixed ways of doing things. And that's what I see in the female leaders of the world right now, you know, like Jacinda down in New Zealand.
Yes.
Elizabeth Warren, you know, hugging yeah. people at her rallies, you know, that this connection is so important.
Yeah.
So that's where the vision I see, where it's moving.
I love it. And I can feel it when you say it, I feel it in my body. So I just I want to take a deep breath and just say, may it be so. Cause yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And what a beautiful thing to focus on in this moment of crisis for so many people is also the possibility mm-hmm. because there's both happening. There's a breakdown and there's the building up of something new. And
yeah. And I think that, you know, it's good to respect the breakdown, that
absolutely.
That thrashing, the dying of the patriarchy, the, you know, sort of the final falling of the old dinosaurs, is going to have ripple effects, and it's going to be painful for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that is a necessary part of the dissolution. And that there is, you know, it's like that great metaphor about the butterfly, that the butterfly in the cocoon continually seeks to recreate itself into the butterfly, yeah. and that it keeps melting back into the soup of yeah. the, you know, the chrysalis, and that happens a number of times before the actual structure is in place for the butterfly to form. So I think we're in that dissolution right now.
I think so too. Wow. Oh, Eleanor, this has been such an amazing conversation. I feel like I could talk to you all day. It's so inspiring. I do want to ask you before, as we wrap up here, so if people want to learn more about you and your work, let's see, you've got, yes, and you've got a live streaming show, like how can they find you?
Thanks for asking. I'm in the process right now, Liz, of putting myself more online, like we all are.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a Patreon, which is, it's you go to Patreon / Dance Naked, you cannot go to Patreon and find me by putting Dance Naked in the search engine because I'm behind an adult firewall. This is the result of FOSTA-SESTA laws that, you know, keep anybody from stumbling over what might be adult material. Mm-hmm. So I have a website, Dance Naked Productions. And, you know, I'm on Facebook under Dance Naked Productions and Instagram and all that. I was doing this live streaming show a year ago, Under the Covers with Eleanor, where I would come on live every week and talk about sex. And I discontinued it because it was a lot of vulnerability, and I got saturated where I was like, okay, I think I've done enough of talking about sex for a while, and then I moved into doing my show, and that platform kind of fell away. So I'm in the process of reestablishing that. So I'll be doing that coming up here in the next couple of weeks. But again, I'm sort of giving myself a break and allowing myself to take as long as it takes. But my show is available on Vimeo. So if you look up How to Really, Really, Really Love a Woman, the passcode, if you want to rent it for free, is pussy. Just put that I will say it doesn't work to do that on a phone right away. I think you have to do it on a laptop and then you can stream it on a phone. I don't know why that is, but that's the case. And you can, you know, it's also available to my patrons for as little as $1 a month. and I'm super grateful to have patrons right now because all of my gigs have been canceled, you know? So I'm figuring out how to become what I'm thinking of as an online entertainer. But for right now, my patrons are sustaining me and I'm super grateful for that. And there's my other show, Lust and Marriage, which is about having an open marriage, is on there. Sex We Can is on there. So, and I'll be putting more and more content on there. So that's a way for people to find me.
Awesome. And what a great gift to be able to access this show. We really should do yourself a favor and watch it. It's incredible.
Thank you
so much for being on the show today. This has been so much fun. And
bless you. I'm so grateful for all of the questions, Liz. And thank you for creating a forum on Facebook where we could all come together and have mirrors, what I think of as sacred mirrors for our own divine feminine. And I feel like the network is building. Like every day it's getting stronger. So
I do too.
Key component.
I do too. And it is my pure pleasure to be in conversation with people like you on this topic. It just lifts me up so much. So thank you.
Yay.
All right. Well, so thanks guys for being here with us today. And as always, if you like the show, be sure to give it a 5-star review. Make sure you subscribe or you can tell other people about it, or even better, you could do all three. Thanks for being here. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Home to Her is hosted by me, Liz Kelly. You can visit me online at hometoher.com, where you can find show notes and other episodes. You can read articles about the sacred feminine, and you'll also find a link to join the Home to Her Facebook group for lots more discussion and exploration of her. You can also follow me on Instagram at Home to Her to keep up to date with the latest episodes. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here soon.